Hello
Hi,
again.
Toby.
So that's
If
okay.
my AirPod falls out, the call ends, but it's
That's
really in there now.
okay. She's gone. I love that.
If I touch it, it goes. So it is in there and it is fixed, and I will not touch it.
Oh my God, I'm keeping that in the edit, I have to tell you. She's no, it's just like I promise the AirPod, once it's in there, I'm staying, and it just goes boop boom. Hello everybody, welcome back to the next stage. I'm Toby Vince and I will be your host for this episode. Today we are joined by Sophie Jones. She is the writer and performer of Eel. It's a brand new piece of international solo theatre. It's making its way to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year. It's going to be, in my opinion, one of the sleeper hits of the festival. It's got a great balance between comedy and really powerful storytelling. Sophie is with us to tell us all about it. Take a listen. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next stage. Today, I'm joined by Sophie Jones. She is the writer and performer of Eel. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, Toby.
How are you today? All right?
I'm good. I'm good. Excited to be here.
Good. Thank you for coming on. It's great to speak to you and learn all about the show. So, before we get into it, this is a question that we're asking everybody we've got on the Edinburgh Fringe specials we have for the podcast. We would like to know, what does Fringe Theatre mean to you?
That is such a lovely question. I was thinking about Fringe Theatre the other day. I've actually come to London fresh off the end of South Africa's Fringe Festival, the National Arts Festival. And I'm always heartwarmed and reminded when I go to a Fringe Festival. I've actually been to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival on my gap year, and I've gone every year to South Africa's Fringe Festival. The resilience and the creativity that happens with fringe theatre, because often people are financially backing themselves, so taking a financial risk because they want to tell a story, and you have to be pretty invested to do that. I think the other thing that I really like about fringe theatre, at least, I mean, from what I remember of Ed Fringe, but also very much with South African fringe theatre, people make do with the most economical sets. My play, for example, I just had two wooden boxes, and people have often commented that or asked me, how come, it's so creative that you do all these things with two wooden boxes? And I'm like, oh, I had no money. Like that. And I think sometimes the constraint of having no budget really almost, I don't know how they phrase it, but I know that they say like constraints really help with creativity because you have to make do with what you've got. So I think the resilience and creativity that fringe theatre elicits always makes for an amazing story. And even if it doesn't, because I've seen bad fringe theatre, even if it's really shit and not creative, it's still resilient. Like people have still come all the way to wherever the festival is, because it's not often in someone's hometown, or sometimes, but people travel, people rehearse, people are sometimes in their lounges, in their bedrooms. Like I just love that I almost reminds me of the original storytelling, not one where you've got masses of funding and you can do fancy things with set and moving set and big lights and a live orchestra. It's just people trying to tell stories, which is what people have always tried to do. So that's what fringe theatre means to me, and I love fringe theatre.
And you've touched on something that I think, I mean, at Fringe Theatre's core is simplicity. Like, the idea, I think, behind Fringe Theatre is that you aren't trying to make this grand spectacle. Like, obviously, you will get shows at the Edinburgh Fringe that have had a lot of money invested into them. You know, there are people who will very fortunately have secured like external funding, maybe from the Arts Council, or maybe they've crowdfunded. However, you'll also get those shows at the fringe where people have probably been like work been working like a lot of hours and saved a bit of money on the side in order to afford small parts of it. And the beauty of The Fringe is that it gives those people the opportunity to create that work. That and the simplicity that goes into it sometimes, I think can be quite endearing, but also arguably better. I think as an audience, being given the challenge to play along and feel as if you're within the story as a person rather than just a spectator of it, by, you know, again, making you think like the artist as they were, it really adds a whole new depth that only Fringe Theatre can really get to, I think.
Yeah, and I think without the spectacle, you just connect and you listen to the story because there's not. I just went to see The Empress at the RSC, and it was amazing. Like there were people coming out of the floor and coming out of the freaking ceiling, and you watch all that and moving set and turning from a ship to a queen's palace, and you. But with Fringe, it's often just a person. With very little, and so you really have to listen and engage with the performers. So I really like that about Fringe Theatre.
What you're bringing to Fringe this time, it's Il. Give us a bit of insight into the piece. So tell us what it's about, and, well, how did you decide on it? Why did you want to create Il?
So Il is a semi-autobiographical story. It's about me going back to my mother's homeland of Mauritius. She grew up in South Africa, so I'm very much South African, but her parents were from Mauritius, so I've always felt like a kind of second generation Mauritian. And when I was 18, I went back to Mauritius to explore my roots, and I thought I knew what I was getting into, but I had no idea. How I came to write that story, when I was, I've been going to, my dad's been taking me to the South Africa's Fringe Festival, the National Arts Festival in Makanda, which was previously called Grahamstown. So lots of people know it as the Grahamstown Festival. And since I was probably 16, and I, when I was 16, I saw a play that a writer and actor, Wessel Pretorius, one-man play with just a metal bathtub and a suitcase. And he did this one-man play about him and his father and finding himself and an identity. And it was the first time I just felt so understood. And up until then, I like wanted to join Greenpeace as a career. And in that moment, I was like, screw Greenpeace. This is how we change the world, by telling stories that make people feel seen. And since then, it's just, like, often people to ask me, or ask, like, how did you decide what to do with your life? And I guess I've kind of almost known, but from that moment, I was sure. And everything since then has just led more deeper into theater, from all the school plays to working as a front of house person at a theater in Cape Town, and now finally getting to actually practice in the industry. So since I saw that play at the Fringe Festival all those years ago, I have always wanted to tell a story about my mother and I. And then I went to Mauritius and I realized it wasn't just about her. It was about this legacy and this heritage and this tiny, tiny little island in the middle of the Indian Ocean that has so much to unpack and such a condensed history in it being so small, but also such a well-preserved history, at least in my like family line, whether it's written records or just anecdotes of ancestors that get passed down orally. So by the time I left the island, I realized the story was more about the island than it just was about me and my mother, but it was also about me and my mother. So I guess I'd always known I'd wanted to tell the story in some shape or form, but I had to go there to discover that the story was in our past and in our kind of country of origin, just as much as it was in our present relationship.
That story, like you say, it goes beyond just what your connection between your mother and your connection between Mauritius is. It's a story of culture and of people, and like how relationships can form, especially through like that very, very specific lens of island life. What would you say then was the early development of the piece? Like, how did you take those experiences and those stories and start weaving them into what would become Il?
That's such a great question. Well, it was back in 2020 when we all got locked indoors. It was really cool to be a South African in that time, because a couple of actors who'd had the chance to go overseas had international connections. And one actor, actress in particular, Claudine Ullmann, set up all of these online courses with really big international institutions. So we did a comedy cellar, like New York Comedy Cellar course online with Rick Crom, and we did a different course on solo storytelling with Jess Matolo, who is I think she's still the creative director of Segon City, Toronto. And she had some really great prompts of just write and just write. And it had been sort of 4 years since I'd come back from Mauritius, and the story had been stewing somewhere, but in a way my time in Mauritius, as much it was interesting, and I tell it very tongue-in-cheek with a lot of laughter. At the time, it was quite a traumatic experience that I think I'd probably buried, but Jess Matolo had these fantastic prompts and just sort of guided you through a writing process, and then these anecdotes came out, and they were kind of so crazy and shocking that some of my fellow course mates really liked them. And then it sort of wove into something. Then I did the best thing I've ever done, which was sign up for the National Arts Festival in South Africa. And I've actually had quite a few young people come to me and they say, Sophie, how did you do it? And I said, get a deadline where if you don't do it, everyone will be very disappointed in you. And better yet, get a deadline with an application fee so you'll feel really shit if you don't deliver. That's the only way it happened. I've kind of worked with two directors. So the first version was a play over Zoom, where Richard White, a South African director and actor, directed me and really helped a lot with the kind of narrative. I just had all these anecdotes that I'd written from this writing course, and I said, okay, well, there's this story and this story, and together we kind of wove them into a narrative arc. And I performed it in my lounge with a hand-painted map of Mauritius behind me, and my boyfriend in the corner with all of the desk lamps we could master between our two homes, with different lighting gels duct taped around them, and then him on literally like a eight plug point freaking extension. You know the things you plug in and they've got lots of plug holes? What's it called?
Like an extension cord, extension cable. Yes.
Just switching them on and off for the different lighting states. So I did that on Zoom. It was very sad. It was just a sad story about all of these things that happened. And even it was so sad that even the things I thought were funny weren't really funny. And maybe also, you know, you can't hear the audience laughing on Zoom. That doesn't help the rest of the audience laugh. And then the next year, the National Arts Festival was going to be in person. And I decided I wanted to do it in person, but I chose to work with Rob van Vuren, who's a household name in South African comedy and theatre and film. I'd seen him at the Fringe Festival actually through the years, and I always loved how he'd do these stand-up specials, but have a moment in the special that was really, really profound. And that's what I wanted with this piece. So I kind of approached him and asked if he'd be willing, read him the script. He said it was very sad. Well, he didn't say that, but I, from the amount of jokes he said I needed to write, I gathered. And then we just added jokes and found the funny and found the funny. And it's now a really, really funny piece, which I can't say because everyone laughs. So I hear them every time.
When we're writing like solo performance, you're really given a bit more of a difficult task than when it comes to being with multiple people, in that you have to maintain your story and your narrative whilst keeping us as an audience interested.
Yeah.
You know? And there are different ways people do that. Some people stay as one constant, like, thought-provoking story. Some people switch in between, like, genres of performance or mediums of performance. So I'd like to ask, what would you say is the key to making good solo performance?
Oh, that's a great question. I think just pace. Rob, as my director, has told me many times, just drive, 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 drive. Even in the quiet moments, you're still just freaking pedal down on the gas, vroom. Don't drop the energy. I think that's the key. I know with this piece, my set is really minimal. It's just two boxes, wooden boxes. So making that as visual as possible, whether it's physical, there's quite a lot of physical theater and movement, and I flip the boxes around and they become various different places. And I would say laughter. I think I have seen solo plays that are not funny. But I think if something is funny, you can never go wrong. And if people are genuinely laughing, they're listening. And if they are laughing and then they're not laughing at certain points, it means they're still listening. But they're listening maybe more closely because they're not laughing. But I think you can never go wrong with... You can go wrong if you try to be funny and it's not funny. Then you're in a bad position. But if people are laughing, they are listening. And Rob really helped and pushed me to do that. Like the first 20 minutes of the show, he told me to write like stand-up. I think in a way, I've often heard that Fleabag was originally a stand-up set. And he just said, write jokes. And I was like, but this intro story isn't funny. It's not a joke. I'm trying to set it up. And he's like, it has to be funny. Just write, set up punchline. And I did that. And I think it still comes across like a story. Like people don't realize I'm just doing stand-up comedy. But they laugh and they don't know why. And it's because it's the maths of the setup and the punchline.
And I mean, you are right. Fleabag, this is just for reference, this is Phoebe Waller-Bridge. The now very successful writer who's show Fleabag. It started as a piece of theatre. It was at the National Theatre in London. I believe that was like a sort of stand-up, like mixed solo performance. And that kind of got expanded into television, where it just absolutely flew off the handle. The beauty with comedy is that we find comedy very funny because, like, there's an element of truth into it. And also that when you said, like, if people are laughing, they're listening, that's very profound, and I really think that's true. When we're having a piece of comedy, chances are that started as something quite sad or quite tragic. But having that, like, as time has healed it and the person who's, you know, saying said jokes has taken time to process and be like, okay, look, I can see the funny in this now. As an audience, that gives us license to laugh with them about it, even though when you sit and think about what it is that they're saying, it can be really dark. You know, it's family and generational trauma. We've made no secret that that's a really key and intrinsic part of this script. And you're taking the time to explore the complex ancestry of this character. This character is based on you, but it's not you. It's a young girl exploring Mauritius. Is that right?
No, it's really me.
It's you. Okay, fair enough. So this character, who probably is Sophie, is exploring the complex ancestry of their Mauritian heritage. What is it that you think about exploring ancestry that keeps us as an audience like enticed? How much of your experiences have you included in this story?
All of the experiences are true. The question is how much I've embellished them, and it is a secret I will take to my grave. I think that generational trauma and family themes are so interesting and so exciting because they're actually all the same. And I've had so many people, one of the kind of metaphors I use throughout the play is Mauritius is a tropical volcanic island, and kind of the metaphor of feeling like along my maternal line through my mother to her grandmother, there's this lava kind of dripping and this rage underneath everything kind of bubbling. And so many people come to me after the show and they say, I've also gone to Lava Mom. And I think we enter the world as ourselves, but we're actually just a big bag of family trauma that we get from our parents, and that maybe once we're adults, we suddenly realize they got from their parents, and then you realize got from their parents. And I mean, I think now more than ever, people are really talking about how much our attachment styles and coping mechanisms and all of our dysfunctions just come from our primary relationships with the people who raised us. And yet, when we enter the world and we meet people and we go on dates and we start a new job, no one ever gets that disclaimer of, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just, you know, addicted to adrenaline because that was the only way we survived in a fight and flight household. I know I always turn like my projects in late, or sorry, I refuse to be in a committed relationship with you. It's just that I'm really defensive and is scared of like commitment. You know, we just kind of are all these things. So when we get to talk about where it comes from, I think everyone really likes it and feels a bit relieved. So I think it just feels so personal, and it's the kind of thing we don't get to talk about. And we all see ourselves in it in different ways.
Listen, we have Sophie Jones here. She is the writer and performer of Ela. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. We have Sophie here, writer and performer of Ela. Now, you are part of South African theatre company. It's called Spark in the Dark. And alongside yourself, they're behind the show. Can you let us know about how the company was set up, the kind of work you produce, and how any listeners to this show could get involved with the company?
Oh, that's a cool question. Spark in the Dark started as South Africa was sort of coming out of our heavier lockdowns. I started the company, and behind it was a vision to be a spark in a very dark time for theatre. I also really like our logo, which is a little lighting bug with a theatre light as its bum, which a friend designed for me. At the moment, it's pretty much just me. I sort of collaborate with other production companies and theatre friends of mine. The one aspect or event that Spark in the Dark runs, which is probably the best way for people to get involved, is a thing called Playthings. And Playthings is a new material night where theatre people and performers of any kind can just share a new piece of writing or a new performance bit that they want to test in front of a live audience. We have it on the last Sunday of every month in South Africa at a lovely new kind of recently started theatre space called the Outlaw Base. And we usually run a writing workshop before the show. So sometimes people have like prepared a lot in advance and they've learned their monologues off by heart. And sometimes people have just attended the writing workshop and have a couple of scribbles on a page and they just want to share it. But I am always so heartwarmed and amazed and left laughing. Well, not always. Sometimes people have very deep stuff, but at how people just wanting to share is always captivating. And when people are given an invitation to share, whether they actually are professional theatre makers or professional storytellers in any capacity, or they're just normal people who never studied it and never did anything more other than a high school play, but they still love to tell stories. Everyone's really good. I don't think we've had weird performances, but I don't think we've ever had, we've had a couple of bad ones, but it's always just lovely, I guess. We actually performed it. We took a show up to the National Arts Festival, our Fringe Festival, 2 weeks ago. And it was amazing. It was the first time, because I'm based in Cape Town, South Africa, so my whole theatre network and the people who come to play things are all in Cape Town. It was the first time we got kind of an international lineup. Not international, national, just national. Except for that one American guy. Lineup of performances. And it was so nice to see short performances from people across the country. And everyone's got such a different story. There's an amazing South African theatre company called Verity Productions. And they're all recent graduates from AFTA, which is like our acting and film school in South Africa. And they're based in Johannesburg. And they came to do a performance. And their performance was literally an African funeral. So they treated us like the funeral attendees. And they entered like they were the funeral procession. And it was such satire. But it was like basically the story was a story of a young lesbian woman who had been murdered for being lesbian. And her parents had been very disapproving of her sexual orientation, but now were crying very extravagantly at the funeral. And the satire was on the homophobic pastor and the mother who ended up crying so much she was lying on the floor. And it was one of those fantastic moments where in the beginning, everyone's like, is this supposed to be funny? Because everyone's crying too dramatically. But then you realize it is funny. And it was one of the best performances, like short 10-minute performance I've ever seen. It was hilarious, but also really profound in how they delivered it. So it's, for me, playthings is just a place for people to experiment and try new stuff. And it's only through doing that that I think you kind of know if it's good or not, because an audience will always tell you. You will always know, unless you're really oblivious. So that's kind of one thing that Spark in the Dark does. We also, it's my vision to be present at our National Arts Festival for years to come. And my hope actually from me going to the Fringe this year is to get a sense of what it's like, get a sense of what it takes, and in the future take more South African productions to the Ed Fringe, because I think South African theatre is something really special. And I think we've got amazing stories to tell and the creativity to tell them.
I think it's so good to be able to have that, all the international cultures converging into one place, and especially with South African theatre, which, you know, by the sounds of it, satire and the profoundness and that sort of bordering on the line of, is it comedy? Is it tragedy? That sort of vibe. I think that's something that, in my opinion, the Fringe can always use more of, you know? That sort of thought-provoking work where you're not quite sure if you should be finding it funny or not, but nevertheless, you are, you know? So, at the time of this recording, you've literally just finished a run at the Bite Size Festival. So, that's down in London, for anybody who doesn't know. Give us a bit of a chat about that experience. First of all, how'd the run go down there? And what have you learned from it in preparation for Edinburgh?
Oh, such a good question. But I actually got an Instagram message from a woman just after I was performing a run at the Baxter Theatre in South Africa. And she said, my mom saw your show, please bring it to London. Which I loved, because I love it when mothers and daughters come watch my mother-daughter play. And then I said, you know, screw it, why not? I'm going to Ed Fringe anyway. And sent an email to Riverside Studios, which is managed by a South African. And his son, by some miracle, had seen the play the night before. So I ended up being part of Bite Size. And in a way, it was just a dream come true. Like the whole time I was kind of like, I'm performing in London. I'm performing in London. I'm performing in London. And they had a dressing room. Like, I'm used to dressing in like the corridor behind a school theater. No, they had everything with access cards, like real first world stuff, I'm saying. So it was just really cool. I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know how much the humor would translate. So there were often a lot of South African colloquialisms that I found ways to explain to the British public. And those kind of worked well, but I wasn't sure if the same things that make South Africans laugh, which is usually, I mean, maybe our sense of humor is quite dark. I will say South Africans laugh louder than people in the UK. People in the UK laugh like the Queen, like just ho, 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 ho. South Africans guffaw. Yeah, they guffaw and they clap and they roar and they wet themselves because they tell you. One woman came to me, she told me four times in one conversation that she had peed her pants during my show. I kept being like, do you want to keep talking to me or do you want to go to the bathroom, because this is Candy, why?
But honestly, it's really cool that by pure coincidence, like a direct connection to Riverside Studios was at your show. That's so cool. And it just goes to show, you never know who could be at the Fringe. You never know. Like, this, like, if you're listening and you're a performer or an audience member, you, again, who is in your audience, even if it's just one person, you never know how much, honestly, power that person could have when it comes to where you end up, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. And I guess that's why I'm so excited to be at Ed Fringe. International, baby. But yes, overall, I had a wonderful time. I have like 10 friends in London, and part of that is family, and they all came, and there were like 30 people on the first night and 50 people on the second night, and I'm like, who are these strangers who have heard about the show? So it was really, really awesome to get a crowd that was beyond my network, and they liked it, and it went down well, and I had a great time, and I had a wonderful experience, if that was your original question, to clarify.
Would you say that when you reflect back on that, is there anything you've learned about that you want to take to Edinburgh? Or is it a case of, okay, we've had a good run in London now, let's see how we do up north?
I had, for the month before I arrived in London, I was rehearsing my new play, Dog Rose, which premiered at the National Arts Festival. I was auditioning for a puppet show, which was like a week-long audition process that was incredibly physical. So I'd run from my morning rehearsal for a new play straight to a puppet show audition. And then in the evenings, I was working. So I'd end up going, side hustle is online work, and I'd end up going to bed at like 12 o'clock and being up at 8 the next day. And in a way, I was like, this is great because I am going to be so fit for Edinburgh, in which I have no off days for the whole month. Like, I am exhausted, but I'm reaching another level of emotional fitness. And I thought I could sustain it. But the moment I arrived in London, my body was just like, nope. And I crashed hard and I got so sick. Like, I'd never been that sick ever, I don't think. Like sleeping for 6 hours a day plus 10 hours at night, like barely hiding in the like hiding in the dark, barely looking in any light, in bed all day, which was the days immediately after the performances. But then I still had to go perform at night for at Riverside. And I'd be like in the dressing room, just curled up with a pillow under my head on the floor and be like, girl, you're in London. Like people, my aunt had come from Wales to see the show. There was no way I could, I paid for a British visa to be here. There was no way I couldn't go out there. And in the days before, I'd been at the National Arts Festival with my director, Rob. And I kind of said like, what's happening? Like, what is this career? And he said, we're athletes. And you just, there's a point, and I think athletes go through this too. There's a point when you can't do it anymore. And then you still finish the marathon. And you just go into overdrive. And it's like, and he said something really special happens there. And you just sort of, you're not telling your legs to move anymore. They're just moving. And that happened. And then I was in bed for a week after that.
And this is the thing nobody ever tells you about the Edinburgh Fringe when you're an artist, is that it is a marathon. Like the length of the Edinburgh Fringe, it's a whole month. It's the month of August, basically. And when you are doing like one, maybe two shows a day there, assuming that you were to be performing throughout the entire month, that's around 40, 45 shows, which is mad. It's crazy. And then bear in mind that when you're there as well, you are also a spectator at the Edinburgh Fringe and you want to see other people's stuff. So you're like, okay, I've got to perform, but I also want to see this. And then I've got to eat and then I've got to sleep, but I can't sleep because I've got to perform again. You know, it's like it's one mad rush. So if anything, Sophie, what do you want audiences to take away from their experience of Ile?
I think what I got from that very first play that inspired me to do theatre, which is just feel a bit more seen. I don't feel like we talk or watch or consume or make that much content about our relationships with our parents. Like, there's so many love stories out there and, I don't know, action movies and yada, yada, yada. But our relationships with our parents are always, like, they mean so much to us. Even when we don't want them to. And even at the same time, if we don't want them to, we really want them to, if you know what I mean. We want to not care, but we care so much, and I'll go out on a limb here, they are never uncomplicated. It's never easy sailing. And if you have it easy sailing with one parent, you definitely don't with the other. So I think I'd like people just to feel a bit more seen. And like, it's okay, even though it's not okay, it's okay that it's not okay. And just, it's okay to see yourself, your parents in yourself, even if you don't want to, and maybe it's a bit inevitable, despite our best intentions, to not see ourselves in our parents. But also feel seen, not just in that, but like the coming of age theme for me. In a funny way, I still feel very close to my teenage self because I feel like I haven't changed that much. Like, I still feel 12, but I also feel 15, but I also feel 18. And I think in a way we all do, because that's really when our identity forms. And just all the things that come, especially being a young girl and like wanting boys to like you and feeling ashamed and like having bad sex for the first time and second and the third and the fourth. And accidentally, you know, hooking up with your cousin and all the kinds of things that we all go through.
But honestly, listen, Sophie, it's been great to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I do have to ask you, what is the next stage for you and Ile? So what can we expect from you during and post the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year?
I was thinking about this because everyone tells you have to go to Ed Fringe with like a goal.
Yeah.
I was like, what is my goal? And I think so many people who go into theatre or
acting of any kind, they're like, I'm gonna be famous. Let's think about it. It's like, it actually looks pretty horrible to be famous. Like, like you, your life is ruined. Like, you have tons of money, but like your life is ruined. So I don't think it's that. But then I was thinking, I'd really love it to get picked up by other festivals. Like, it'd be really cool to tour and tell the story everywhere. And you know what? I wouldn't mind if someone picked up the treatment and the episodes and like I rented out the whole of Mauritius, which isn't possible. No. It's an entire country. But like a whole beachfront, and we made a little season one, you know, that'd be cool.
That would be lovely.
But I think actually something I've been doing a little bit and I'd love to do more of, I've been performing the show at a lot of schools in South Africa and doing it alongside a workshop called Tell Your Own Story.
Okay.
So working with kind of 17, 18-year-olds and show them how I've told my story, but then working through some exercises where they tell their story. And every single time by the end of the workshop, I've got a little tear in my eye because all of the stories, even from the most uptight girl who wants to get it all right to the boy who's probably stoned in the corner and slouching and just being cheeky and rude and talking to his friends. By the end of it, everyone's got the story and all of the stories matter and all of the stories are special and beautiful in their own way. So I think that's my calling in life.
Yeah.
I just want to make more spaces for people to tell more stories because I think that's how we connect.
Sophie, where can we find you online?
On all of the platforms from YouTube to TikTok to Facebook to Instagram to Twitter. It's Sophie Jones, but Jones is spelled J-O-A-N-S. And my handle is usually Solo Jones. That's S-O-L-O underscore J-O-A-N-S.
Awesome stuff. Thank you. Sophie, once again, thank you for so much. Once again, Sophie, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. It's honestly, it's been great to listen and speak to you about Ela. It promises to be like one of, in my opinion, one of the sleeper hits of the Fringe. Go and get your tickets to see this. Sophie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Toby. This has been lovely.
Thank you. And that was Sophie with Eel. So, a bit of information about the show for you. Eel plays from the 2nd to the 28th of August, and it's at Pleasance Courtyard's Bunker 3. Shows will begin at 11:35 in the morning, and they will last 1 hour. All ticket information and all the information that she said regarding her social pages and where you can find her online, I will put down in the episode description for you. This is the Edinburgh Fringe special. We have a whole host of artists on to talk about the shows that they're bringing to the Fringe Festival this year that we can personally recommend you go and see. Listen, it is going to be an incredible festival. Eel is going to be one of those shows that you do not want to miss. And trust me, I've seen a lot of shows. This is one you do not want to miss, okay? Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you at the next stage.